This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
By the Book on BFM 89.9.
Hello and welcome to By the Book. I am Lee Chui Lin, and with me, as always, my fellow appreciator of both the written word and the drawn image.
Thank you.
We have Sharmila Ganesan. And over Skype with us today, we have special returning guest Hanif Baharuddin.
Hi.
We have waited so long to be able to do this with you again, Hanif. Thank you for doing this remotely.
Thank you for having me again on the show.
Is Hanif our first three-time guest?
Yes, he is our frequently arriving guest.
It has been three times, yeah? I thought this is my second time. Oh, yeah, I forgot. This is my third time.
Yes, so this is the third time that Hanif is joining us for our monthly book club. And after doing a kind of lonely-ish book club last month because of all the physical distancing and social distancing that we've been doing, we thought, it's so nice to be able to invite a guest back. And Hanif is here because we are continuing our journey through Neil Gaiman's The Sandman, which is a multi-volume graphic novel saga. And we've kind of split it up into, we're going to end up doing four episodes, I think. So this is, we're halfway. And today we're going to be talking about volumes 4 and 5. So Season of Mists as well as A Game of You. And I think we'll start off with Season of Mists, which tells the story of a rescue.
Yes, a rescue and also a, I suppose, a whole series of negotiations. Mm. Yeah? Any other descriptions you want to throw in, Hanif?
I think that is, in fact, yeah, it started out as a story that is supposed to, I guess, it's supposed to be a rescue story, right? Of course, I think because Dream was, Morpheus in this case, was guilt tripped into redeeming himself for doing something quite bad to a former lover. But eventually, yeah, it became a story of negotiation only because he was given the keys to hell. Mm. And that's a pretty interesting one, I feel like, yeah. So, and then it evolved into like a question of negotiation between a lot of parties who are interested to own hell, right? They want to be, they want to own hell for their own personal reasons. And yeah, it became a story of, you know, people presenting their arguments to Dream and Dream, you know, trying to take into consideration their proposals, right?
Yeah, and I think what's cool about the premise, aside from it just being a cool thing, this idea that you have Lucifer essentially saying, I am tired, I am done, you know, you want to come for it, you can have it. Aside from that, I think is being introduced to different characters from different pantheons, because you do see, for example, the Norse gods coming and saying, look, okay, here's why we should have it and here's what we can give you. You also have Japanese characters, you have people from fairy, you have angels, Egyptian gods, and also other characters who exist within the DC Vertigo realm of characters. So it's a mixture of real mythology as well as very specific to this galaxy of DC Vertigo characters who exist within that space.
Mm. And speaking of the Sandman universe, one of the things I really like about Season of Mist is that it actually starts in, I think it's the first time that we see all of Dream's siblings, that which then becomes a sort of revisited trope in the rest of the series, all of the siblings. So Dream, Desire, Death, we did it in the last show and we forgot as well, but Destiny, Despair, Delirium, I think I got all of them, gathering, and that's how the book starts, because Destiny calls a meeting and that sets in motion everything that comes after. And that is very, very exciting, because I love any story that has Dream and his siblings coming together is one of my favorites. And then anything that has Lucifer in it is also one of my favorites. So in some sense, The Season of Mist is one of my absolute favorite volumes in the whole collection.
Yeah, I think it's definitely one of the more memorable series, I think, purely because, yeah, the story, I think this is one of the stories in the series that have like a beginning, middle, and end, right? I think Gaiman wanted to tell it in that sense. Although there is a middle part, there is an interlude that shows the effect of, you know, hell not being open to an extent, yeah. But other than that, I think, yeah, it was my personal favorite as well in terms of story. It was definitely one of the more memorable stories that from the series so far that I've read, yeah.
Okay, before we proceed, can we just get a check? Who has read all of The Sandman? Because when we first began, Hanif hadn't, and that was one of the things that we were talking about. It was sort of a good reason or impetus, I think, for you to kind of get going, and I want to know how much or how little we can talk about in terms of impact, and especially when we use words like favorite. I just want to know what we're talking about here. So I've read all the volumes, okay. Hanif?
I've read till the 8th volume, yeah. So okay. I have 2 more volumes left. Yeah.
I've read all of them, but because they were so long ago, and when I revisit, I tend to revisit individual volumes. So I actually don't remember everything specifically. So rereading this is actually very rewarding because I'm remembering again. And when I say favorite now, I remember how much I liked this one.
So I say this not to diss anybody's choice of this being a favorite volume, because it is actually a very, I think, one of the main touchstones of the entire series. There are some volumes coming up. There are some volumes past where if you don't read it, you're missing out in terms of story, but you're not missing out in terms of narrative. You still roughly know why things are happening. But Season of Mists, I think, is... And I don't think this is a spoiler to say, because a lot of momentous things happen in it. It's a lot of closing off of certain stories. For example, it brings to an end the story of Dream and Nada, you know, mm-hmm. this lover of his that you know has played this tremendous role in his life, and it closes off that story, and you don't need to know what happens next to know that that's a big deal, and you also don't need to guess at what might happen to know that when everybody comes together for power negotiations the way they do in the Land of the Dreaming, that it's going to have tremendous impacts after that as well. So yeah, it's a really important text.
But on that note also, I do think that not every volume of The Sandman you can recommend to someone as a standalone. I think Season of Mists actually stands alone quite well. As long as you have a little bit of background about what this world is, you could read this just on its own. And and like you said, Hanif, it has a beginning, a middle, and a quite a definite end, and it gives you a great idea of what this character is and how he operates, and I think so that it's actually a great entry point if you're not too hung up on reading things chronologically.
Yeah, but I do think that you need to also have some small, I guess, knowledge about Nada as well, to some extent, don't you think?
I mean, I think they set it up quite well in the beginning when they imply that she was his lover, and she spurned him, essentially. And so that's what... So I think, for me, I feel like that's enough to kind of set up what happens next.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, only because I think if you're... If you've been reading it chronologically, you know that at one point when Dream first visited Hell to take back what was, I think, to take back his helm, if I'm not mistaken, right? Yeah, he came across Nada, and it was just like a brief encounter, but it was like a very impactful encounter at the time. He was just like, oh, okay, yeah, this is something, somebody significant in my life that I'm not going to deal with at this moment because I have other things to deal with. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so you... And it's a typical Gaiman style, right? That he hinted at things that he will later tackle. So I understand where Lynn is coming from when Lynn, you know, tries to put me on the spot or put us on the spot and, you know, question whether that's a favorite of ours, right? Because you can sort of like tell that there will always be, I guess, that he likes to world build, right? So world building means setting things up in the beginning and maybe, you know, passing on, I mean, and tackling them later, right? Yeah, so that's what I feel quite... It's always intriguing whenever you read Simon. You know, one way or another, some things will be tackled later on down the road.
Yeah, I didn't mean to put anyone on the spot. I think it's more to say that because we're only halfway through, and this is volume 4, so to say that the favorite sits at volume 4, I just think it's an interesting statement. And I do have some favorites that are coming up a little bit later in the series. But when it comes to Season of Mists, I think the other thing I appreciated about it, aside from the family interactions, aside from the fantastic story, is also the fact that it introduces characters like Lucifer. And it also, you really get to see Desire, who is a very important sibling, because Desire really sets in motion a lot of the things that are to come for Dream. And you get to see how Desire operates. You get to see a bit more of that relationship play out. And it's a very, very prickly, difficult relationship. So I appreciated being able to kind of see glimpses of it and see how it can move things along.
I agree, and in many ways I think that's it's also a book where you can see for the first time that Dream is changing, because Morpheus, when we first start, and we talked about this in the first episode we did, that it is kind of an evolution of him as a character, and this is the first book where you realize he's actually becoming less self-absorbed,
terrible, I was going to say.
Starting to realize, you know, that this awesome power that he has also means that he's become, in many ways, an awful person, and starting to realize what that means to those who might be connected to him. So I think that's why this book works, this volume works so well.
And interestingly, we're going to be moving on after this to talking about a volume that a lot of people dislike, and that is A Game of You. But if you've read The Sandman, if you're currently taking advantage of the MCO and the time it affords you to make your way through The Sandman, let us know what you think. Are you enjoying it? Do you have issues with it? We just want to know. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be right back on By the Book, BFM 89.9.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
Hello, everyone. You are listening to By the Book with Lynn and Sharmila. And over Skype today, we have our book club guest, Hanif Baharuddin, returning champion for the third time. This time to continue journeying through Neil Gaiman's The Sandman. So we have spoken so far about now four volumes, mm-hmm. and now we're moving on to the fifth, which is A Game of You. We apologize in advance, by the way, for any weird technical glitches that occur. If you've been listening to the station throughout, you'll realize that we're all just victims of technology at this point.
The realities of working from home.
Correct. So yes, Game of You, which is a very, very different book to Season of Mists. For one, it takes place almost entirely not in the dream. Well, I mean, it's kind of half-half, but it introduces a whole new host of characters, people you've not really met or you've only met in passing. And it is, I think, in some ways, one of the most challenging volumes of the entire series.
Not my favorite, I must say. So we moved from a favorite to a really not one of the ones I would revisit unless I had to do it for a book show, for instance.
funny because I guess for me personally, it feels like the story it has a different approach to compared to Season of Mists, but somehow or other I kind of like those moments whenever Gaiman decides to tell a story that doesn't feature Morpheus that much. And in this particular volume, it's more of Morpheus coming in towards the end a lot more, and this, the focus is more on these two separate places, right? You have an incident that's happening in New York, and then there's another one happening in like a half dreaming land or something, or rather a dream belonging to somebody's at least in this character is the Barbies, right? So I can see why people might not like it as much, but for me it's okay. I don't think it's that bad. Why do people don't like it though?
It's not bad at all. I think for me, there's a few things. One is also reading it continuously after Season of Mists, right? Where you're sort of immersed into this world that's amazing. And then I think the whiplash of coming out of it into something that feels quite ordinary is one. But the other thing is that it does introduce a whole host of characters who you're not very connected to from before. And if you read the rest of the series, you'll also realize are only tenuously connected to some things. And I don't love any of them. I think that's an issue. I don't like any of the new characters that have been introduced. There are some other characters that he's done in the past which I really, really like. And those I'm actually quite happy to read more of. For some reason, this entire group of people, I don't really like very many of them, and therefore spending so much time with them for me was a bit of a chore.
Okay, I'm going to say a gross thing, which is that I found that reading it through the lens of, through a more critical lens, meant that I liked it more. By which I mean, if I think about it more in terms of, say, what it has to say about gender or what it has to say about the ways in which people who feel like outcasts have to negotiate the world and how they find connections. If I think about it in those terms, then I enjoyed it more. If I think about it just as a story, then you're right. Everybody's horrible, mostly. The world in which we're occupying feels really grimy, and I think that's on purpose. New York feels really gross. It feels kind of dirty. And then you go to the dreamland, which is just like cotton candy floss, because it is a land that was clearly created by a six-year-old girl or younger. And so the push and pull and the contrast between that, I think, yes, can make for whiplash. It is one of those things where it is more telling in a graphic novel form because you can actually visually see it. Whereas if you were reading it, I don't think it would be as oppressive, I suppose.
I can see where you're coming from. I think I'm quite like you in that sense. If I were to be looking at it more from a critical lens, I sort of appreciate it. And I guess that's how I've been looking at it, as opposed to looking at it as a story. I like Gaiman's take on all these characters that have, I guess, a more nuanced backstory and background and their relationship with people and the society, right, in general. Because I think most of them are outcasts, and you know, and they are quite different types of outcasts, right? It's interesting to see them all together in one apartment or rather one building, and then having to, you know, bump into one another and have to, you know, interact with one another in that sense. That's quite interesting. And I think, I mean, there were moments that was, I feel, that were quite funny to me, at least. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like funny in a dark way, I guess. Mm. Yeah.
No, don't get me wrong. Actually, it's a fun read. It's just, for me, it's one of those that, and I remembered this when I was revisiting that I had completely forgotten it. So out of the 10 volumes that I've already read, this one was something I actually had very little recollection of. What I did enjoy, though, is actually the visuals. I think it has exactly what you just said, that contrast of the different scenes that they're in, the way the panels change depending on the character, because this is a group of characters that are all very different from each other. Most of them are outcasts, and therefore their worldview is very clearly illustrated, and I enjoyed those things about it. So it's not by any means a weak link, but I just don't think it's something that appealed to me as much as the rest of it.
I will also say that nightmares become a more important feature as the books progress, and Game of You introduces you to how horrible nightmares can be, because there are scenes, I think, where dreams are invaded and then they start to entangle among one another, and they also show you how intimate dreams can be and how invasive it can be when it feels as if someone else has entered your space. A lot of A Game of You has to do with invasion, has to do with people walking into spaces that they don't belong in. And see, here I am talking about it in these exact terms. Yeah. I don't feel like, I feel like I'm not engaging with it as a story, but when I think about this book, that's how I think about it. It's very much in more academic terms, I suppose, than I think about the rest of the series, which really hooked me emotionally. This one, perhaps slightly less so.
I mean, I think it's worth keeping in mind also that in some sense, you're not actually meant to read each volume in this all in one go. When Gaiman created them, even these volumes, each comic actually came out at a different time. So you would have a bit of a gap in between, months apart, or maybe sometimes even a year or two. And so therefore, I think that experience might have been very different from what I would have had in this particular case. And I wonder if that would have maybe changed the way you feel about it as well.
Yeah, since you brought it up, yeah, I wonder whether it changes your perspective if you were to read it in one go, right? Because I think the first time I read these stories, I read them in one go, and when I first read it, it was in the omnibus format, so there weren't any clear demarcation on, you know, which volumes these stories are in, right? So for me, I have to sort of like, you know, separate them in my mind, or just know that, okay, this is the beginning of a new story. And yeah, I guess consuming it in that sense is quite, I would say, difficult, because sometimes it can be quite heavy, but you're absorbed world that is Gaiman trying to create, but at the same time, you need to be able to sift through the content separately, because, you know, there are a lot of stories told in, you know, multiple perspectives, different approaches and whatnot. So that's another conversation that we can have perhaps, maybe about, you know, how should you tackle Sandman in an ideal way, right?
For me, the ideal way to tackle Sandman has actually, weirdly, been in the rereading format, because this is maybe the third or fourth time that I'll be making my way through it. The first time I read it very, very quickly because I wanted to know what was going to happen, and especially because you can start to feel a web surrounding the central character. You're starting to be able to tell that there are certain grand journeys or grander plans afoot. And so there is this real desire to, oh my God, what's going to happen? And actually, from Season of Mists to Game of You, I think that's the reason why Season of Mists lays out the beginnings of that web. A Game of You says, let's take a journey to another part of the world.
A little thread hanging off the web that just kind of dangles somewhere.
Correct. Let's take a pause. And I mean, we're going to talk about volumes, I think 6, 7, and 8 in the next round. And those actually really start to pick up steam in the way that 1, 2, 3, and 4 did. Or 1, 2, and 4. So I think that rereading it really allows me to appreciate each volume for what they individually are, and gives me a little bit more, what's the word? Gives me a little bit more patience with the stories that are more tangential. So that's been for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like maybe it was a good break to take after Season of Mist to a certain extent, I feel. Because as much as I like reading stories about Morpheus, I do enjoy those tangential stories that somehow or other is in relation to the dreaming world, right? And I feel like, yeah, whenever... and sometimes those stories are the stories that I look forward to a lot more than Morpheus. Not to say that I don't care about Morpheus' story. I mean, it's just that sometimes you want to be transported into like a slightly different world that is somehow related to the dreaming world. And I think Gaiman knows how to tell a good story regardless of, like, you know, the perspective. And I do appreciate and enjoy those moments whenever, you know, we take a break from a direct Morpheus story to a story that is someone else's story. Yeah.
So we've been talking today about Neil Gaiman's The Sandman, specifically volumes 4 and 5, Season of Mists, as well as A Game of You. If you've read all of The Sandman, if you're making your way through it, if you're curious about it, we just want to hear from you. You can, of course, WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. If you have more that you'd like to say, you can drop us a mail at buythebook@bfm.my. And that brings us to footnotes, where today, in the tradition of what we did the last time as well, we thought we would continue to talk about graphic novels or graphic novel series that we've enjoyed. And it's, I think, just we don't get to talk about graphic novels as such and on a standalone basis that often. So seemed like a good time. Hanif, what have you got?
Okay, so for this episode, I would like to recommend The Sculptor by Scott McCloud. So this was published in 2015. Scott McCloud is, of course, I mean, if you are familiar with graphic novels, I guess he wrote a monumental book that I have not read yet, to be fair. But I was told that it was quite good. I've already bought it, but I haven't had the time to actually go through it yet. It's called Understanding Comics. So he's always been known as an author that is trying to talk more about the form rather than, you know, telling his own stories. I think he has written some stories before, but towards another point in his career, he started to focus more on the form of how to produce a comic and how to, you know, understand comics and things like that. So I guess he was more well-known for understanding comics. So I think recently he decided to publish his own story called The Sculptor. So the thing about the story is that it's interesting. I mean, it's worth reading for you to sort of like explore how the story was told. The ending might not necessarily be the best, at least for me, but it's a very emotional story. It's a story about a guy, a sculptor, who is not really happy with his life. He bumped into death, and death, you know, granted him a wish. Basically, you know, he said that I want to be the best sculptor ever. So he was given that skill, but he can only use it for 200 days. After 200 days, he has sort of like, you know, has to die. So we follow his journey into utilizing that skill and how he I guess manages things, because at that point in his life he wasn't doing well and he was struggling with things. And of course he met a girl, you know, as soon as he got that skill and became slightly good at sculpting, he met a girl and things sort of like, you know, follow on from there. So yeah, I won't say it's the greatest story ever, but yeah, it's worth reading just to see how Scott McCloud executes things. Yeah.
It sounds like something that would look great. It has so many opportunities for visual imagining.
Yep, in terms of that, yes. Yeah, I think it's worth checking it out for that, mostly. I mean, again, the story wasn't bad at all. It's just that I feel like, yeah, I wasn't a fan of it that much. I don't know if it's fair to recommend a story that you weren't a fan of that much, but I guess...
I think it's a left-field choice, and it's worth doing.
But again, let me clarify this. It's not a bad story. It's just that I am personally... Yeah, I rated it 3 stars on Goodreads only because I feel like it's worth 3 stars rather than 4 stars.
Well, I'm going to move on to, I suppose, if Hanif's was a sort of self-contained story, mine is a huge sprawling bunch of reads. It's actually the series called The Graphic Canon, and I love them. I came across the first volume, and if I'm not mistaken, there have been 3 that have come out so far, plus an additional children's version. And essentially what it does, it collects the canonical literary works all the way from the beginning of literature to up to, I think, the 90s, and renders them in graphic novel form. So they're these huge, you know, bricks of volumes, and they're done by different illustrators. The first one starts from Gilgamesh, so literally the beginning of publication or books, to I think it moves on until Dangerous Liaisons, and then the second volume, and then the third one brings it up to, yeah, the 90s. And what I really just like is some of them are stories that you might be familiar with. So you have your Austens and your Plato, for instance. But you also get things like poetry. So you get Christina Rossetti's Goblin Market. You get Walt Whitman. And they're all rendered by very, very well-known artists in the graphic novel field. So you have people like Will Eisner or Robert Crumb or Seymour Schwartz. So I just think it's such a great introduction to literary canon, but also through an art form that I love and makes it very accessible to people who may not otherwise buy them in novel form.
That sounds beautiful.
I have the first two volumes. They're not the cheapest to buy, so I'm very excited to be able to purchase the third one when I can.
So I'm just going to close off by talking about something that I think, if you like The Sandman, you will probably like this, and that is Bill Willingham's Fables, which is a long-running series of graphic novels, and as the title suggests, it talks about fables, characters from fairy tales and folk tales, who essentially live among us. So they have their own setup, they have their own bureaucracy, and for the ones who maybe cannot fit in so easily into daily life in the way that, say, Snow White can or Cinderella can, they then go off and live on the farm. And it, I think, runs through all these different things about having, I mean, it runs through the premise itself, right? Which in and of itself is an interesting one, this idea of what would it be like if Cinderella were just a modern day girl? But then it also looks at other things such as the larger battles, the bigger stories, the places that people have in life, whether or not a story told about you is the only story that you can ever live, and whether or not that's the only role that you can ever occupy. And it's action-packed, it's well-written, it's beautifully done. So if you like the more mythological storytelling aspects of The Sandman, then I think Fables is definitely And I mean, it's hugely lauded as well. And it's just a very good read, I think.
No, I love Fables. It's one of my favorite graphic novel series. I remember thinking that when Once Upon a Time, the TV show started.
Right.
It was like a also-ran version of Fables. Just because Fables had already done it so much better before. And yeah, no, I would definitely recommend it to anyone who likes this form of storytelling, but also if you like fairy tales, because it's such an interesting way to reimagine that whole concept.
And on that note, for our book club, for this lost month of April 2020, we've been talking about The Sandman Volumes 4 and 5. Again, that's Season of Mists, Game of You. If you would like to tell us whether you're reading them, what you think about them, you can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can write to us at buythebook@bfm.my. And then in footnotes, we've been talking about graphic standalone novels or series that we would recommend. And Hanif, yours was?
The Sculptor by Scott McCloud.
And mine was The Graphic Canon by every writer that's probably ever existed.
I'm very excited to read that one, actually. And for me, Fables by Bill Willingham, which is complete. So actually, if you wanted to read it and not feel like you were hanging on to the next volume, you would actually be able to get them all. So yes, we would love to hear if you have any recommendations for us. You know, we've only got Hanif for two more book clubs right now, but we'd be happy to find more.
Extend this.
Pretty much.
Convince him that we can all be reading graphic novels together forever.
So let us know if you have recommendations. Again, you can WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio, and write to us buythebook@bfm.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.